Hello, everybody. This is actually Highway Diary episode 293. I got a little mixed up during a recording with Francisco Rincon. The episode is about to play, but before, I want to tell you guys about our sponsor, ACBD Remedy. Go to acbdremedy.com, type in promo code ERIC for 20% off. That's acbdremedy.com. Type in promo code ERIC at checkout for 20% off. Also, I got a show at the Romo Room April 3rd or 4th. It's basically late night, Saturday night, April 3rd, but it's so late it's actually 12:30 a.m. Sunday, April 4th. That's going to be a filthy show. It's called Dirty Birdie at the Romo Room. I'm going to be doing unusually offensive material. So again, that's Romo Room, Austin, Texas, located within the Brass Tap in the Domain. That Saturday, super late night, Saturday, April 3rd, 12:30 a.m., which is technically Sunday, April 4th. Here is my episode with the degenerate piece of shit, Francisco Rincon. Enjoy.
This next comic is a favorite here in the city. I think he's a fucking piece of shit. But guys, give it up for the very funny Mr. Francisco Rincon!
Give it up for OC Moon. OC, you're a very ugly individual, okay? This is disgusting. Have you looked at him? I'm so...
Wow.
He's so ugly. Like, I think when his mom gave birth, his dad thought it was like the World Cup and Mexico was in it, and he kicked him right in the fucking face. That's why he's so fucking ugly.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Welcome to Highway Diary. This is episode 292. I'm in an alley with Francisco Rincon.
Hell yeah, we're doing it the way we should be doing it, Austin.
You know, we're broke comics. We can't really afford to just like hang out and sip margaritas with the beautiful people, the lawyers. So we're by a bunch of dumpsters with some beers, you know?
Yeah, it's great. It smells like trash here, but the beer is amazing. Thank you for this.
No problem,
buddy.
Thank you
for having me on your amazing podcast.
Hey, thanks for doing it. I'm being, you know, we're doing a crawl together. We're going to hit three mics, starting at Micheladas. We're going to Wanderlust Wine Bar, and then we're going to Romo Room.
Yeah.
You know, let's do this dream together.
Yeah, yeah. So the goal tonight is to get canceled.
I saw you several times. Every time I see you, the first thing I said is, you're belligerent, you're hilarious, and you're like, what means belligerent, you know?
Yeah.
You're learning English, you're from
right.
Venezuela.
Yes.
But you're like a pirate. You're this crazy drunken pirate that brings this party.
Oh, shit.
And every time I see you on stage, you're hilarious.
Thank you.
So you're from Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
And you went, in high school, you moved to Houston, or where'd you move in the States first?
Yeah, so actually I moved from Venezuela to Miami.
Miami, okay.
Yeah, and I didn't know any English. And anyway, I lived in Miami 11 years, and then I moved to Houston for my job, and then I lived in Houston for 6 years, and now I'm here in Austin.
And yeah. What brought your family out of Venezuela?
Yeah, so pretty much the situation back then was when, I don't know if Hugo Chavez was the president, he was like a communist ally with the Castros in Cuba, so the situation was really not going well in Venezuela, especially for like business owners and owners of private companies, because the government was just pretty much taking over private owned companies. So that was during the time where, like, you know, Shell, Chevron, and all those like American owned, you know, oil companies were leaving the country, and it was just going. That's when, you know, the country started to really like fall, you know. Because Venezuela used to be an amazing country before we had Hugo Chavez. But yeah, that's pretty much why we moved to Miami.
So he just started taking over all the businesses to get the government bigger. And what was his thing, communism, or what was his idea?
Yeah, so Hugo Chavez, his ideology at least, or whatever his proposal kind of thing. He went with socialism, but really he was more on the communist, corruption, criminal side of things. But yeah, anyway, the real reason we moved is because those things were happening in Venezuela, and my dad was always in the car dealership business and stuff, and then a friend of his opened a car dealership in Miami, and he was like, we need someone that knows what he's doing. You know, and then my dad came. But actually, we are also American, so we're Venezuelan Americans, because my mom was born in Philadelphia.
Okay. So then what brought your mom to Venezuela?
Yeah, so the reason she was born here in the United States is because my grandfather, her dad, was studying cardiology. He was, you know, specializing in cardiology. He was already a doctor, and then he was doing, you know, his specific, whatever, cardiology degree. And then she was born here, but then she went back to Venezuela with my grandparents when she was 6 months old. So, funny fact, I guess, about my family is that my mother, who's the actual American that was born here, is the only one that doesn't speak any English. So it's kind of ironic. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, well, I guess she was just kind of insulated in that house. Was she being homeschooled, or did she go to school at public school in America?
No. She was born here, and then 6 months old. When she was 6 months old, she was still a baby.
Oh, I see.
She went back to Venezuela. She never learned any English. And then, you know, whenever we came to Miami, I was 12, 13 years old. I was able to, you know, learn English as much as I do now. I'm still learning. But, you know, my mom never really picked it up. I told her, you know, you're never going to learn English. She was like, I don't know. I don't need it. I only go to Miami. And then she comes to visit me in Austin, and nobody understands her. So,
you started in high school, but that must have been a good transition, because a lot of the students, I'm sure, spoke Spanish in Miami, so you kind of transitioned.
Right, that's the thing. That's why, you know, I have one of these jokes where I say on stage, I'm like, you know, I've been here for a while because I moved here in 2003, but my friends ask me, how come whenever you speak English, you sound like you're eating a bag of dicks? And it's because when I moved here, I moved to Miami. And that's it. That's a joke. I moved to Miami, and my English teacher was Pitbull. But, like, that's the thing. Like, moving to Miami to learn English, you know, it's like going to McDonald's to lose weight. You know, it's going to take a lot of work, extra time.
Yeah.
And by the end, you will be disappointed. So this is what you have. I know people my age who moved here exactly when I moved here from Venezuela, but they moved somewhere else. You know, not fucking Miami, where, you know, I thought I was going to go to Disney. And I was just surrounded by Cubans, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So everyone in Miami speaks Spanish. But they went to, you know, other places like Boston and more up north, and they speak English like you think they're from there, actually.
Right, right.
You know, but I do have, you know, my thick accent or whatever.
So, you know, you moved 2 years ago to Austin, Texas. Well, let's not skip Houston. What brought you to Houston? You started working
Houston? Yeah, so I studied mechanical engineering in Miami. I wanted to be an architect, but my dad told me that architecture is for the gays.
Okay.
And I
that's unusual advice.
Yeah. And I, you know, I'm not homophobic, but I guess my dad is. And at that time, I just wanted to please my dad for some reason.
I'll just be a manly engineer then. Okay.
Yeah. And then I was like, okay, I'll become an engineer. And that's what I studied, mechanical engineering. Engineering is very popular in Venezuela because Venezuela has one of the largest oil reserves in the world for, you know, petroleum. So there's a lot of engineers. In Venezuela, that's like the thing to be. And I was like, okay, whatever, I guess I'll study that, you know. I was pretty good on math and whatever. Graduated, but I really, like, hated my job, you know. But anyway, I moved to Houston because I was in Miami, and then I got a job in Houston.
Yeah,
That's pretty much it.
Like on an oil rig, because there's a lot of offshore oil.
No, I started in as an office job, working as a mechanical engineer for power equipment. So medium and high volt, like anything that you would see on the substations, on the power substations, on the power grids, you know, those transformers and breakers when you're driving. All of that, like boring stuff you see when you're driving on the poles. And then, So all that equipment, you know, it requires engineering. So I worked for a very large company, a Swiss company, as an engineer. But I didn't really like my job, and that's why I got into stand-up, really. Mm-hmm.
So what was the comedy scene like? So let's see, what year is this? 2015, you started doing stand-up in Houston? Is that right?
No, actually, I started doing stand-up in Houston in 2018.
18? Oh, okay. Yeah, you're real new.
Yeah, 2018. And then, but actually, my first open mic ever happened in Shanghai, China.
What?
Yeah, in 2017. I was living in Shanghai I lived there for 7 months doing what they call a short-term assignment for the company I used to work for.
Uh-huh.
So I went there and I was like kind of depressed because I broke up with my girlfriend of 5 years. You know, I was being a fag, you know, just crying and stuff. And then I went to China and I was like, oh, you know, I need to do something. And then I always had like in the back of my mind like to do like public speaking, something like that, because I thought it was cool. And then I saw this, you know, open mic comedy. I'm like, holy shit, okay, I've been listening to comedians.
And in English? How many people speak English in Shanghai?
Yeah, so in Shanghai, they have a lot of expats. It's a very international city, and they have a lot of people. I think almost like 27 million people live in Shanghai, which is almost the amount of people that live in the entire country of Venezuela, where I'm from, mm-hmm. but just in one city.
Right.
But yeah, they do have a lot of expats, and there's a very nice comedy scene over there. There's a lot of good comedians. I think just recently, though, the Shanghai comedy scene got shut down by the Chinese government because, you know, they are communists and, you know, a lot of things.
You're not allowed to say anything bad, you know, about the CCP.
Yeah, like freedom of speech, it doesn't go too far over there in China.
Okay.
So it got pretty much shut down. So most comedians that I know from Shanghai pretty much moved to, you know, Japan or maybe South Korea. Or maybe like Hong Kong, which is technically China, but a little bit more liberal. But yeah, that's where I tried my first open mic.
How'd it go?
Was in China. I thought it went well, you know, people were laughing, but I think it was mainly comedians laughing, you know, at me. Because I was saying like really like stupid shit, like maybe even like racist and unnecessary, you know. It was really not professional.
Kind of rude.
Yeah, I just didn't know what to do. I don't know. So, like, my English sucks, and then I was trying to do stand-up. Are you crazy?
Right, right. to half Chinese people, you know?
Yeah.
Sounds like a crazy scenario. So then you go back to the States, you go back to Houston. Something's gnawing at you. I'm not happy here. Something's not working.
Yeah, so I went back from China to Houston, right? And then, but in China, like in Shanghai, it was a very like lively, I guess, city. Like a lot of, you know, movement and bars were open. You could go on a Tuesday and it almost felt like you were out on a Friday kind of thing.
Right, right.
And then I don't know if you've ever been to Houston, but Houston is more like, you know, more like family oriented. It's more like
suburbs and a little downtown.
Yeah. I would say, what's the opposite of liberal?
Conservative?
Yeah, it's like a more conservative thing, and then, you know, it's more like families and people work 9 to 5 and this and that. So, you know, on a Tuesday you go to a bar in Houston, there might be a few bars, but it's not like very active or anything. So I was like, damn, this is kind of like boring. Like, I already was excited about, you know, what I did in China, mm-hmm. and I went back to Houston this time without a girlfriend, and I was like, fuck, like, I want to do shit, you know. But yeah, everything was kind of like, but then I did comedy in Houston, and I really like the comedy scene over there. The comedians over there are amazing, and they're extremely funny. And I did the competition in Houston, Best Comic in Houston competition. I had only been doing stand-up for, I think, maybe 5 months or something. I advanced, so that was like a boost, you know, for me. And then, you know, I started to get booked here and there. And then I started applying to jobs in Austin, because I didn't like my job, and also because I wanted to be in a city more like that was more like active and stuff, you know, mm-hmm. During the week even. And then I got a job here in Austin, and that's when I moved to Austin, also as a mechanical engineer, but for another company. And I kept doing, you know, open mics and stuff, and then I COVID hit. But yeah, that's,
is your job still going, or now you're just working on stand-up all the time?
Yeah, right now I'm a professional open micer. So I lost my job because of COVID. They told me they eliminated my job, but in reality, I think it was a pretty easy decision for them to let me go, because maybe they were thinking about it, you know? But then it was like, kind of, COVID happened, and then they were like, okay, it's easy, we can just fire this guy. Not fire him, but tell him his job has been eliminated. But yeah, I didn't enjoy my job. Most of the time, I would do, like, trying to write jokes or edit or be on, like, YouTube listening, you know, to whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't know, babies taking shits. I don't care.
Now, but, I definitely was in jobs where, like, in Los Angeles, you know, and, like, I would just, like, start leaving. And then I literally did this for 6 months before they caught me, because it was like from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. And then I would like by lunchtime, I would do all my work. And then I would just like do like hang out, like go yeah. like answer phones, answer emails and split. Nice. And I would go home because I was so tired from waking up at 6:05 in the morning that I would go home, sleep. Then I would go to Flappers you know what I mean?
Yeah,
then I would
yeah,
start
yeah.
doing mics at night because I needed like.
Right, right, right.
Because then I would get home at fucking, you know, 1 a.m, and then I had to wake up for 6. So it was just like, I needed like a whole 5 hours to sleep.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
I feel you. One time I went to open mic in Houston. It started like at 11 p.m. or something. And I go there, and they're like, oh, you have to pay $5. And I'm like, what the fuck? I've never paid for a mic before. But I didn't ask questions. I didn't know a lot of people. It was like a black room. So a lot of, you know, black comedians and stuff.
Yeah, I've heard of these people.
Yeah, and, you know, I was like, oh, shit, I hope my jokes do well here.
Yeah.
Blah, blah. So I paid the $5. They put me last on the list because, you know,
they didn't really know you.
No, and by the time I got there, they already had, you know, the list. So then I wait. It's almost 3 a.m., and then it's my time to go up. And then the host goes, okay, well, that's all for tonight. And then I'm like, wait, I didn't go up, you know. And he's like, yeah, but you watch the open mic. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I don't know. I would pay to watch like a show, but not pay to watch an open mic.
Yeah,
I wanted
yeah.
to do the mic, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But and then after that, I ended up, you know, meeting those people, and they were like super cool with me and stuff. And but yeah, that was just a funny thing. And then the next day, I had to wake up like at 6 a.m. So I only slept, you know, I don't know what.
So yeah, you
three.
Start living like a double life. You
yeah.
start like, you know, yeah. going like if you really want to do it and
yeah.
get better, and then mm-hmm. it's so addicting, like, you know. When you're on stage getting laughs or not, that's pretty binary. Mm-hmm. And I was telling you, I started when I was fucking 16 years old.
Yeah.
I just put 3 specials out, you know, and then like Monday, I bombed the Romo Room, and I'm still like, fuck, like until I can get another set out of like it. There's something
yeah.
like unfinished about my business in this world
yeah.
until I have a good show to erase that, you know.
Right. I think there's a similarity. I played baseball growing up, and I think there's a similarity of sports, and especially baseball, to stand-up, because I had this coach. He used to always say, you're as good as your last game, and you're as good as your last at-bat. And that is kind of true. Like, even if you know you're hitting home runs and whatever, but then if your last game, your last at-bat, you, like, stroke out, it's like, fuck, you know? I need to get a
yeah,
hit.
Even if you're 10-1
yeah.
and you're killing the team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You strike out. You don't want to strike out.
Right.
You want to be 11.
Yeah.
Or at least get on base.
Right, so it's like, you know, it's like this never-ending thing. And like you're saying, you know, you I don't know, it's like you enjoy the process.
Yeah, yeah.
What's going on with the bats, with the coronavirus? This is unbelievable. Unbelievable. Remember the AIDS monkey? Then we had the mad cow disease. Birds started H1N1. And now COVID started with a bat. It's like Chinese New Year. They all have different animals. And then they all have different diseases associated with that animal. The Chinese calendar, you know? Hopefully next disease is chill. Hopefully the next animal is chill. Hopefully it's just like, this is the year of the goat. You'll have mild diarrhea. It's like, we can all do that. Diarrhea sounds cute after this bullshit.
And it's so addicting because not only are your jokes, like, you think that your jokes are, like, fixed. Like, this joke works, period.
Right.
But the crowds are so amorphous. And so new people come in. Maybe half the room has seen you before. Half the room hasn't. Mm-hmm. Like, for some reason, the half the room that hasn't seen you and doesn't know you hates you immediately when you step up. I remember a weird story. I don't know. I saw you. I don't want to name names or go into details or say venues or anything like that. But I was at a show recently, and all the comics loved you. And we were all laughing because you were so funny. The host could not have hated you more. I've never seen it where all the comics know you and we're all laughing and you're so ridiculous, but the host thinks that you're insulting her. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Without saying
names or venues or
anything?
Why do you think that happened?
I don't know. I think apparently she doesn't have a lot of experience actually being an open micer or doing stand-up.
You teased her, and then she took it really, really serious.
So, but I think it's just she's a regular human being.
Right.
She's not a stand-up yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because once you start doing stand-up, at the beginning, you know, things get under your skin. But as time goes on and you keep doing stand-up and you become more of a comic, there's less things that will get under your skin. And you will know, no matter what people say to you when they're on stage, you know, at the end of the day, they're joking, and even if they're being serious, you have that comic mentality where you just kind of, you know, fuck people off, like, in your mind. Like, you really don't care that much.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've said worse things to other hosts, and after I go up, you know, I go give them a fist bump or whatever, and we're cool, and we knew we were joking. You know, I was roasting her, but she, like, I got under her skin, and the whole room could tell.
That's what was making me laugh so much, because what you're good at, Francisco, is you created this awkward moment that was sort of not your fault, really. It was just she didn't like you, and it was kind of obvious, and you stirred the pot like a fine soup, and you just kept poking at what was awkward about it, which is making me fucking die laughing. It's just like, oh, she doesn't like me at all. And then you just started pointing at her, and her face back to you was just like pure hatred. And then she was like, you don't have to talk about me, you can do your jokes. And then you're like, see?
So
the more you sort of like marinated in how awkward it was, the more it was like making me die. Like,
I think I said something like, you are like if Simon from British Got Talent or something was a woman. So she was like so serious. And But I think she's an absolutely nice person. And I saw her go up recently at another mic.
Oh, so you probably just made up and everything
and
is fine now.
She was pretty funny. You know, you can tell that she's starting out, but you know, we're all humans. And I'm sure we're going to be friends again, or we're going to be friends.
Good.
I tried to make up. I tried to give her a high five, and she told me pretty much, she said, get away from me, don't touch me, I hate you.
And
I was like, oh, okay, she's still a little bit angry.
You know, every cloud, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
So she knows you for sure. Mm-hmm. So that's good.
Yeah, but I think one thing about comedians is that we want to like be liked, you know? As much as I got under her skin, she's getting under my skin, because it's like, you know, it's like, why don't you like me? But you know, I think, you know, us, we're always gonna have people that don't like us. You know, even Jim Gaffigan, who's a very clean comedian, you know, he does these jokes about horses, and then the whole like horse racing community got after him or something. So it's like, you're always gonna, you know, some people are going to be with you, other people are going to hate you.
Mm-hmm.
What can you do, you know?
Let's take a break.
All right, give it up for the next guy, also another Mexican. I'm just playing. Give it up for Francisco Rico!
Thank you. Say the N-word, but never call me Mexican, okay? Don't drink my beer either, you fucking white trash faggot. No. Hey, give it up for the guy before me, retarded dolphin face. You did great.
Boom. You're telling me an interesting story. So I moved here with my friend from Los Angeles, you know well, CJ Kelly. Mm-hmm. But I came from Jersey, he came from LA, and we met here. You were telling me you found a roommate on Craigslist, huh? And there was a spare room?
Yeah, so when I moved to Austin, you know, I needed a room, and I cannot get a...
Direct your voice this
way. Oh, okay. So I needed a room, and I couldn't get an apartment because my credit, it's fucked up. Because I used to do Airbnb, and I would, like, rent these places under my name. And then I got into a tough situation with a couple of apartments that I used to rent. Uh-huh. And pretty much right now, my background is fucked up. Uh-huh. Because I owe one apartment almost $5,000. But anyway, I couldn't find an apartment, so I was looking for a room on Craigslist. And then I found a beautiful female roommate. And then when she was going to show me the room, in my mind, I was like, I don't need to see the apartment. Like
she was sold.
Yeah, she was all I had to see. she was pretty hot, beautiful, you know, wearing leggings, their tie. You could see a little bit of her camel toe. She had a beautiful dog, you know. And I was like, okay. But I had a girlfriend in Miami, long distance. So, anyway, I was behaving. And then COVID happened, quarantining happened. I couldn't leave the apartment. And guess who I had in the apartment 24 hours a day? My beautiful, hot roommate. Oh. So we play, you know, Scrabble and Pictionary and Dominoes, all the best games, Twister. And, you know.
Two-person Twister alone in the apartment.
Yeah.
That can get
so one,
risky,
and then we had a few beers. And, you know, we were in, like, a weird position. Twister, I was, like, red, yellow. She was, like, blue, you know. Where
right-hand camel
yeah,
toe.
Yeah, and then we kind of, like, fell. And then, you know, then my penis accidentally went into her pussy. that's not how
is
it happened.
That's how it worked. Oh, wow.
But, long story short, yeah. So quarantine happened, and then I started hooking up with my roommate. And bad boy, I had a girlfriend in Miami. That was not a good thing to do. Anyway, pretty much.
So then you hopped on Skype and you said, listen, sweetie, you know.
No, actually, no. I'm a bad person.
Is she finding out now on the podcast?
No. They both know. They told me, actually. That's how it happened.
Were you were on Facebook or whatever? You were still attached to this person? Or?
Yeah, no, man. I was dating my girl from Miami, and then the girl from here, my roommate, we were just roommates that were hooking up. So, yeah, I was, what did they call that? Cheating? I was cheating on my girlfriend from Miami.
Friends with benefits.
Yeah, man. So, anyway, one night I got super fucked up. And my roommate told me, okay, so what are we, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, we're, you know, you can be my girlfriend. And then I woke up the other day, I'm like, fuck, I was drunk. And I told her that we could be boyfriend and girlfriend. And I told my roommate that I had broken up with my girlfriend, my aunt, which was a big lie.
Venezuelan lie.
Yeah, big Venezuelan fat lie, which is ironic because people in Venezuela are skinny because they're starving, no food over there.
Oh.
Anyway.
You probably don't torture any of your family back home, do you?
No. The only thing I do to torture is I film a boomerang on my Instagram of me throwing food in the garbage. And I send it to my cousins.
Who are starving.
Yeah. And I'm like, look what I do with food here in America. I don't like kale.
That's so mean.
We got fucked by kale.
That's so rude.
No, by the way, I asked a cousin of mine if he wanted me to send him kale because he was dying of hunger. He told me he'd rather die. He said, I hate fucking kale.
All right. So you had to talk.
Anyway,
you lied, but yeah. You lied.
So long story short, I had two girlfriends at the same time.
Yeah.
I was in Miami visiting my girlfriend from Miami for her birthday.
Oh.
And then her Instagram, it's always a social media. Folks,
you guys
don't want to live a double life, don't have the social media. I didn't have social media, but my girlfriend's Instagram was public. Mm. My girlfriend from Miami was public. So she posted a photo with me and her And then
what happened? My boyfriend.
Yeah, then what happened? My girlfriend from Austin saw the post because she knew the name of my ex girlfriend, or she thought it was my ex from Miami.
And you're like, I'm just going to Miami, see my family.
Exactly. And then it was the opposite of seeing my family. It almost looked like I wanted to have a family with that girl. But anyway, my girlfriend from here sent her a message. Hey, why are you taking photos with my boyfriend? Blah, blah, blah. And then, that was the end of it. And she started to hit me on the head. The girl from Miami, because she's from Venezuela, and Latinas are aggressive.
Yeah.
She hit me.
You know, you have good head movement, or did she start getting it?
No, I just stood there like a mannequin, and I took two fists to the back of the head, two Latina fists to the back of the head.
Did she go for the plates?
No. We were in the hotel room, and then I'm like, fuck, I gotta pack my bag.
Right.
And that's gonna be uncomfortable because she's hitting me.
Yeah.
But then she started to pack my bag for me. And in my mind, I was like, okay, good. She's packing my bag for me. I don't have to do that. And then she kicked me out. And the craziest part is that her parents were in the hotel in a different bedroom, because it was Father's Day. For some reason, she told it was also her birthday, whatever. And then they were waiting for us in the restaurant downstairs to have dinner. I didn't go to the dinner.
Yeah.
She kicked me. She kicked me to the curb.
And then you're like, oh man, they make their own guacamole at this restaurant.
Yeah, no, actually.
Should I sit through the awkward dinner for like the high-level food?
Yeah. I started walking on the street like a crazy person, just with my, you know, my bag
rolling
there.
Suitcase.
Yeah, my rolling suitcase there. I had, you know, I didn't wear sunscreen. I was like red or, you know, all crazy, just walking. And then
you got punched a couple times. You're like half concussed.
And then I don't know if you know who No Neck Ed is, but it's this guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That black guy who.
No.
He hangs out with Big Daddy Long Neck.
No. It's a guy from this show called 90 Day Fiance or whatever. He's like this very short guy.
Oh, with Rose from Thailand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's like chubby, and they call him No Neck Ed. So I walked into this like Mexican restaurant just to sit down and, you know, order a drink or whatever, and then I see No Neck Ed, and I got happy.
Was this in San Diego? This is in Miami. I thought he lived in San Diego.
This was in Florida, in Florida.
Oh wow.
Miami. You know.
Wow.
North of Miami.
Yeah, I thought he lived in San Diego. I guess he's making the rounds now. Doing interviews.
Yeah. No, he was like he was there just for like vacation, and he was with like a crew, like a guy, like filming and stuff. They were doing something.
Oh, okay.
But I was like, okay. But yeah, man, I felt horrible because, you know, that girl from Miami, she's a very nice person, very nice woman, and I'm a shitty, shitty man. But I will never do that again, you know. You learn from experience. That's why we're here. You learn from experience, you get back up, you know. If I could go back in time, I would tell her, hey, you know, this long distance thing, we have to stop.
Yeah.
And that's it.
You know, I told my roommate, CJ Kelly, I said, hey, if I save 74 cents or more on my taxes, I'm going to put you as my husband.
Hell yeah.
You know what I mean? Because
exactly.
It's like, hey, we already live together.
Right.
So. And, like, if we have to go to a government office and prove it, like, I'm going to prove it.
Right.
And I told him, I said, I'll put tinfoil around my penis. If you masturbate me with tinfoil on my penis, it's not gay, right?
Right, no.
At the office.
Actually,
the tax office.
It's only gay if you think it's gay, you know?
Yeah.
If you're doing it as a favor for a friend, that's not gay.
Or like for like a paperwork.
Yeah, for paperwork, you should totally fuck him.
Yeah.
In the asshole.
Sure. Well, I'm glad we cleared all that up. So, okay. I kind of, we've talked a lot about your timeline.
Yeah.
The part that's missing here is sort of Houston. No, we talked about Houston to Austin.
Yeah.
Okay, let's now talk about the comedy scene.
Mm-hmm.
I personally love the comedy scene here.
Yeah.
I've been in other comedy scenes. I lived in New Orleans. I lived in New York City.
For
I lived in Los
Angeles.
How long
have you been in comedy? 16 years, right?
From when I was 6. I'm 35. So 19 years.
Oh, shit, okay.
But
cool.
9 of those years, 19 years. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
9 are all improv.
Oh, okay.
So I only have 10 years of stand-up experience. But you can But if you go to YouTube, check out Conspiracies and Dick Jokes, Fart Porn in Beer Halls, and It's a Medical Device, my 3 stand-up specials.
Nice.
Free on YouTube. And I film them driving from Los Angeles to New Orleans to New York City, and I filmed 50 shows.
That's great.
And then it took 2 years to edit.
Oh, shit. All right. You got a friend to film for you?
Yeah, I traveled in my Prius, you know. I traveled with him, and I put the seats down, and then we had all the camera equipment and our gear in the back.
Cool.
And then, you know, basically a guy, my friend Colin McDowell of Tulsi Productions in Denver, Colorado, edited it. But my friend Skylar Neal was a cinematographer who traveled with me across the country filming
it. Good shit, man.
But we could talk more about that off camera, because if you start to get in that area where you want to do that, I have all sorts of advice for you.
Okay.
That I would, but let's talk about that off camera maybe. Where do you think the city's going? Because I just read an article this morning that Austin comedy's booming. There's the Creek in the Cave is about to open April 1st. Mm-hmm. Hopefully the Cold Town Theater opens April 6th.
Yeah.
It seems like, and then I was on the phone with my buddy Jody Barton yesterday, and he says that Joe Rogan is going to open a club somewhere south of Lake Travis, somewhere in this area.
Cool.
So it's like, you know, it seems like there's all these venues.
Yeah, Cap City is opening at the Domain.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah.
Cap City, so like next, near Romo?
Yeah.
They're going to compete?
Well, I wouldn't say compete. You know. I don't know. I don't know how the business side of it,
right.
But from a comedian perspective, I don't see
there's
it as
more playgrounds to play.
I wouldn't see it as competition. Really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just nice that, you know. I mean, I moved here before COVID, and I read the article, and the comedy scene here was great, and now we're getting a lot of other comedians. So it's just gonna be, you know, Dean said in that article, you're gonna have to really earn your spots, right? Because there's a lot of talent in the city, so you have to really, you know, deliver. You have to really, you know, be on the top of your game. You know, sure, you know, you might get booked here and there because you're friends with the booker or the guy running the show, but at the end of the day, you know. It's also a business. People want to make money. People want to bring crowds, and people want to laugh. So you need to really bring your A game, you know, all the time, especially when you're doing a showcase. So you gotta stay, you know, active and work hard. You know, write, do all the mics, get on stage, and you know, just yeah, man. It's
like baseball.
Yeah. So there's so many people here now, and more people are moving here. So it's almost like, in a way, it's like it motivates you to even work harder. You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like you cannot fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but at the end of the day, what I tell myself is just live day by day and just enjoy every day. It doesn't matter what I'm doing, if I'm doing an open mic or, you know, or whatever, if I'm saying jokes at the park or if I'm doing a show, you know, in Cap City or whatever. Just live day by day and just enjoy the process. That's what I tell myself.
And also what's cool is, like, because we do what we do solo, I don't look like there is a competition, right? Because you want to kind of get spots. You want to, like, be on the top of your game. But that's out of my hands whether I get booked here or get booked here. So I just try to, like, with the other comics, I just feel like they're my colleagues, and I just try to be as nice as possible to them. And, you know, like, don't be a douchebag.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, man, I think that's something I try to remind myself, just to try to be nice to everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. But, like, when you're on stage, if, like, what I did, you know, remember what I did to the host, I was kind of like roasting her, you know, we're having fun, we're saying jokes. At that point, whatever, you're on stage, you know. But off stage, you should be nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
And you tried, you made several attempts even in the room that night, and it seemed like your attempts at remediating it, like, hey, look, it's just jokes. You went up to her, yeah. Hey, it's just jokes, and you tried to fist bump her, ignored you.
Yeah. Yeah, then, but again, you know, she...
And then on the podcast, you just keep saying nice things.
Yeah, she...
I'm learning from you.
Right, so, you know, like I said, you know, we're all human. She's more of a regular person, but she will become a comedian, and I'm sure we will be friends in the future.
There's some comics here that are kind of starting out, and I'm like, that person is not... I wouldn't say that they're funny now, but I think... But I see that they love it. And then I go, oh, in like 3 years, like, I'm thinking of a particular comic. I'm not going to say their name, but I'm not saying anything bad. It's like, they're just inexperienced. But if they keep going the way they're going now, in 3 years, they're going to be really fucking dangerous.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And
isn't that fun to watch comics, like, sort of turn corners?
Yes, and that's what we were talking about before, about, like, the jokes, how, you know, it varies on the crowd and this and that. But if you think about it, because we think a joke is finished, but a joke is actually never finished.
Yeah.
Like, if you think about it, a joke could always be made... It could always be made funnier, you know?
Or customized to the situation.
Right.
Because, like, the audience is a moving target. So you have this piece of gold, but to deliver this piece of gold so that they... And that's what I like about you, and I was telling you in the car, like, what you're so good at is you create the situation, like, the joke setup punchline is funny, and you say it, but then you stay in the world, and then you keep, like, saying little things about it that, like, takes it from just being funny to, like, kill it. Like, I see you kill, because you stay in your joke, and then you just... keep tagging it in this weird, you know what I mean?
Right.
And that's when I'm like, man, when I'm writing new jokes, because I just dropped all my fucking best material and I'm starting over, and that's what I'm remembering. When I write a new joke, it's not the joke that's funny, it's the stay in the weird world of the joke and keep playing with it. You know what
keep
I mean?
Playing with it, yeah, that's the key. And I think, you know, especially when we try something like it's edgy and you're like unsure about, it's almost like an overdraft fee, you know? Like, it doesn't matter if you go over your car for $5 or $200, you're still going to have to pay those 35 bucks or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So if I already, you know, jumped out of the cliff with this edgy premise and this edgy punchline, if they're there but they're not there, I'm like, fuck it, I'm already overdraft. So I'm going to try to fucking punch it as much as I can.
Yeah, now I'm going to buy a boat.
And sometimes people, you know, jump back on board with you, and now it's funny, and then you review your recordings or your tape, whatever you do when you go try the jokes at the open mics, and then you're like, okay, I did this here and this worked, and then you can figure out ways why it worked, how to make it shorter, how to extend on the parts that worked, and that's kind of like how I try with like the edgier material kind of thing.
So I was a German exchange student. Auschwitz-Studenten. I spent almost a semester in Germany when I was in high school. To do comedy in German, though, I would have to like really live there for a while, and like my skills are like they could get there, but they're not there now to do stand up. To do stand up in English, how is it for you? I know you've trained English for many years before you did stand up.
Yeah.
But is it hard to, like, do you think in Spanish and then translate it to English? Or do you, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of both, you know. I think in English and I think in Spanish. So sometimes, you know, an idea comes to me in Spanish. And then, you know, I know how to say it in English. But other times, it just comes to me in English. But actually, I think because I've only done stand-up in English, I think if I wanted to do stand-up in Spanish, it will take me a little bit, you know, to, like, it would feel almost like I'm starting from scratch again, just because for some reason, I don't know, like, Spanish is a little, you have to adapt just to, like, the language and the way people think, and also Spanish varies a lot, like, you know,
Castilian.
Like, I'm from Venezuela, and you know, Mexican Spanish and Spanish from Colombia and Spanish from all these countries from South America and even Spanish from Spain, you know, we all have different slangs, different ways of saying things, right? It's almost like when you listen to, like, a British comedian, you know, they might use different words and things like that. So, you know, if I do a set in Spanish with my Venezuelan Spanish to a crowd that speaks Spanish, but let's say they're mostly Mexican Spanish speakers, I might have to alter some of those words to the actual words they say, you know.
Right, right.
Because sometimes we don't even know what it means.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in Mexican or in Colombian or in a, you know. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tricky.
And I even find, like, I, you know, just having a Jersey accent, I find sometimes people are like, "What? You know, where? You know what I mean?" So I'm like, I realize that my accent is a little bit different in the South, and I have to like adapt it a little bit, even just like North Jersey, South Jersey, or North America in Jersey and the South in Texas. You know,
I will have to say it helps me that also my girlfriend, she doesn't speak Spanish. She only speaks English.
Right.
Yeah, she's a whitey.
So you're conducting a relationship in English.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, I'll be listening to my recordings or my tape or whatever, and, you know, she'll be like, what do you say there? And she will say something that is, like, nothing close to what I said. And it's like, okay, maybe I have to articulate that word better next time I say it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because people might think I'm saying something else, you know. Mm-hmm. But, like, recently I said what? Oh, I said, I was doing this joke and I said, I fuck her here. And then my girlfriend saw the tape and she thought I said, I fucked her ear. Which are two different things.
Sure.
But also makes me want to think that some people that might thought I said I fucked her ear might actually find that even funnier that I fucked her here.
Here, ear, rear.
So sometimes I get like new tags just from like not pronunciation words and then getting people, you know, after an open mic or whatever, be like, that part you said, the you know, for this example, the ear shed, that was funny. I'm like, oh, they didn't say ear, I said here. And but then I'm like, maybe I should say ear, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah. So we call that happy. Sometimes you have a happy accident, you know?
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break.
All right, cool.
Fuck, you got a bunch of faggots over here. faggot everyone. Everyone's a faggot. Faggot out, boy, over there. Yeah, I would like to wish happy birthday to my favorite faggot, Guy Brown. Happy birthday. Trigger faggot, chicken head in the asshole to Matt, baby. Hell yeah. I will destroy your anus. Dude, that guy's anus is beautiful. He shaves and stuff. He uses the lotion. Guy Brown. Right. Bro, they told me not to say faggot the other day. I was like, look, it took me 10 years to learn English. Now you want me to forget some words? Like, fuck you, faggot. Go fly a kite. Look, I didn't learn from a professor. I learned from you fuckers calling me a faggot in high school. I didn't know what it meant. Alright, ugly ass Aussie fucking E.T. looking ass motherfucker. Mexican, wet bag looking ass, giving me the lighting shade.
Guys, this next comic right here, I bumped into him at his crib at 5 o'clock in the morning and I destroyed him in 2002 pro tennis. I want you guys to give it up for the very funny Eric Hollerbach.
Keep it going for Ozzie Moon. He is ugly. He looks like a fucking shaved cactus with a shitty mustache taped onto it. Francisco. I've been hanging out with Francisco all night. It's like, I don't know if he's doing a set or like having a cry for help under a bridge. Fucking piece of shit. They came over to see my roommate. My roommate brought over the ugliest girl I've ever seen in my life. She comes over. She has, like, literally a donkey face. I was like, where are you going, the Grand Canyon, you know? She goes to the, she looks me in the eye with all the sadness in the world, and she goes, I know I'm not good looking, but I fucking on the first date.
And I started crying. I was like, this lady knows her place in the world. It's the most beautiful. She just shows up. I know I look like a donkey, but I'll fuck the best thing. And I was like, God. It's the song of the siren. You're really just actually beautiful to me now. I don't know why she became beautiful then.
Anyway, I told Siri today, I'm like, hey Siri, play Cardi B. She was like, go back to your country. I'm like, fuck it. Siri's fucking racist, man.
Can't tell if I'm bombing. I think I'm bombing.
Let's see, how can I say this?
Yeah.
I didn't hear what you said.
You didn't understand. You don't speak English.
Oh, broken. Yeah, I try my best. You know, whiteies are always, you know, pushing down and stepping on people. We're used to it, you know. Whiteies always on top. That's fine. You're a good person. You're racist, but you're a good person.
You got the mix of a softball.
Chinese are allowed to speak. I'll see, how can I say this? I wrote this joke because I knew I was going to be doing this mic, so I've been working on this joke for a week already.
Of course you have.
Look, I think this guy is actually a white dude. You see his hair? It looks like a white dude just had fireworks explode on his face. Push! It looks like if George Floyd survived It looks like if George Floyd survived the Golden Corral burning incident.
As well.
And also, you look like your mom got raped by Buddha.
By Buddha?
You retarded ET looking motherfucker. Look, I'm here, I'm doing my best, you know, I'm trying to practice English, and I learned a few things. You know, we have a lot of racist people, this guy. Homeless guys, for some reason, are allowed in the building. People can just walk wearing blackface, apparently. And
Ozzy,
I'm not going to say anything about you because you have your face, so that's my time. Thank you.
That's another episode of Highway Diary in the Bag. I want to thank my guest, Francisco Rincon, who is absolutely out of his mind, but super hilarious. One of my best friends in the scene. I also want to tell you guys, go to erichollerbach.com, click the calendar. I got a lot of dates, mostly in the Romo room at Domain. But I'm doing stand-up. I'll be at Marshall's Tavern in Taylor, Texas. I'll be at different places. So just go to erichollerbach.com, click the calendar. I'd also urge you to go to acbdremedy.com, get yourself some cannabis oil, and use promo code ERIC at checkout for 20% off. This has been episode 293 of Highway Diary with Francisco Rincon. Later, everybody.